The J-Talk Podcast.
Yosh.
Five against Adventure Hiroshima and five tonight against the team that came into this game closest to them, Gamba Osaka. The J-League champions of 2020 have done it with four games to spare.
試合終了。報道の5対0。2年ぶりの優勝決定です。フロンターレ。
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And on this bonus episode, we'll celebrate Kawasaki Frontale's record-smashing J1 title victory, which was sealed with a 5-0 dismantling of second-placed Gamba Osaka at a jubilant Todoroki Stadium on Wednesday night. Sam, we'll welcome in Neil Debnam in just a moment, but what an achievement from Toru Oniki's team. A season for the ages, and this performance was a perfect embodiment of it.
Yeah, they've been magnificent. I mean, this is the second time they've beaten the second-place team, scoring five goals, so that just underlines how good they've been, how dominant they've been this season. It's incredible the consistency they've managed to achieve, given the schedule and the nature of this season. So, yeah, full credit to Kawasaki, very worthy winners, and, yeah, congratulations, Neil.
All right, then. Well, we didn't want to interrupt his celebrations on Wednesday night, and goodness knows how much alcohol he still has in his system, but he's very graciously agreed to guest on this bonus episode of the pod. Neil Debnam, welcome back, and heartiest congratulations.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much. And, yeah, there's a bit of alcohol still flowing, but I don't know where you get this impression that I drink a lot from, but it's thoroughly justified. So, and yeah, a fun time was had last night.
Absolutely brilliant. And looking forward to reviewing it, recalling it all with you, Neil. But firstly, as regular listeners know, you're never really a fountain of optimism, are you, Neil? But and when we corresponded on Wednesday, while you were actually on your way to Todoroki, I believe the word you used was mediocre to sum up some of Kawasaki's recent performances. So how satisfying was it to not only wrap up the title, obviously, but also to do so in the way you did, a proper showcase of Frontale's capabilities?
Yeah, really, really happy that we did it like that. Because, of course, I mean, I think I got a little bit too overconfident when we headed to Oita. It was like the excitement got too much for me, and then much to the delight of some people, we fell pretty flat. And I think mediocre is maybe generous for some of our recent performances, but it was really good to finish the way we did, because for me, the best thing would have been to win it in Oita, because I'm like a bit of a sneaky person that I'd prefer to do it when less people are there so I can boast about it. But I think the worst option was probably winning it on Sunday night if Urawa beat Gamba. But I say the worst option, but we still were sort of cheering for that as well. But definitely looking at it now, 5-0 against the second place team is, yeah, pretty satisfying. So I'll definitely take that.
Yeah, no questions at all. So, Sam, Gamba, obviously, that had that remarkable slip-up against Sendai a couple of games ago. But before that, I mean, they'd gone 12 unbeaten, hadn't they? And they had bounced back from that Sendai debacle with a win away at Reds on Sunday, it was, of course, wasn't it? So, were you... Obviously, we're going to spend most of this episode talking about Kawasaki, but Gamba themselves, I mean, they just must feel that they've really let themselves down and their supporters down. I mean, they've been absolutely battered by a far better team. There's no question about that. But when you consider that, yeah, Gamba had risen all the way up to second, and while they were never going to catch Kawasaki, obviously, this was a chance to show the rest of the league how far they'd come in the second half of the season, and to fall flat on their faces basically from the off in this game will just leave them rueing this particular Wednesday night.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a blow to morale, because you can go and play Kawasaki, and as they did earlier in the season when they lost 1-0, they came out of that game with a lot of credit, because they'd really pushed Kawasaki harder than anyone prior to, except for Sagan Tosu on the opening day. So But this wasn't the case here. I do think they've had the couple of slip-ups now with the Sendai result and this one, this battering. And they have beaten Urara and Kobe in between. But really, the performances haven't quite been to the level they've normally been at. And I think a lot of that has to do with Yosuke Deguchi being out. He's missed the last four games, and he's so important to that midfield. This against Kawasaki, they played Jajima and Yamamoto, who are both okay players, but really, when you're up against Morita, Tanaka and Oshima in midfield, I mean, they stood no chance and they were completely swept aside in this game. So, yeah, I think Idaguchi's loss was massive to Gamba, but they shouldn't be losing any game 5-0, even if it is Kawasaki. And you've just got to hope for their sake, because they're obviously still battling for the Emperor's Cup place and the ACL. You've got to hope that this is not a severe blow of confidence, because it really could be the manner in which they were just pretty easily beaten.
So, Neil, yeah, you hadn't been wrapped with the recent performances, but could you tell from the very early exchanges here that your boys were properly up for it and were going to put on a bit of a show for the Todoroki faithful?
I could definitely feel that the vibe was a lot different to away in Oita. That was, we were awful in, really, really awful in that game. And it was a real shock in that game how little things worked. And I did kind of feel that we probably would do a bounce back, and we started pretty well, I thought. And in a way, sort of the fact that Gamba were in second place was kind of helpful for us in the end, that once we got a couple of goals, I think it was almost an impossible position for Gamba, because what do? Do they just sit back and try and get like a 2-0 defeat and protect their goal difference? Or do they? I mean, you can't do that if you're in second. You've got to go for it, haven't you? If you've still got a mathematical chance. But by trying to go for it a bit, I think they really left themselves open. So, I mean, yeah, it was definitely it felt different. And I don't know, there was something weird with the supporters in Oita as well, that there was no drums and like very sort of minimal interaction from the fans, even though there are a few of us there. And I sort of wrote something about that in my blog post, but there was definitely a weird atmosphere in Oita, and it was almost like it wasn't supposed to happen there and it was supposed to happen at home. And yeah, it turned out nicely. And yeah, it's nice to see plenty of goals again, because recently, I mean, it's ridiculous for me to sort of to complain about us not scoring much recently, but definitely things, I mean, all teams are sort of suffering now, I guess, from fatigue and injuries, and I'd be the first to admit that Gamba had loads of injuries. So, I mean, we were lucky in a way, but we were lucky to play them at that time. But we were maybe unlucky to have been quite so bad recently, if that makes sense. So it felt different, and it continued to feel different throughout the game. And absolute nonsense, sorry.
No, you're right. Yeah. So, I mean, the way you're describing that performance down in Oita, I mean, now you know how the supporters of 17 other clubs feel about this season, because we've all had loads of games like that with this, you know, condensed fixture list. And that's just one of the most remarkable things in this remarkable season, is Frontale's consistency. And they just haven't had off days like that, have they? They've had, well, I mean, they've probably played poorly in one a few games, but I mean, yeah, just the 2-1-0 losses all season in the league. And every team lays an egg every now and then, and yeah, yours happened to be down in Oita last weekend. But yeah, bouncing back in the best way possible. And yeah, your lack of goals recently, well, you've only scored five here for the sixth time this season, Neil. So it's pretty decent going. Yeah, the fourth time at home you've scored five or more. And, just absolutely remarkable. And, some of the records, we'll list them off shortly. But, let's talk about the game itself then. So, Kawasaki on the front foot from the off. Kaoru Mitoma had a shot blocked at close range by Gen Shoji just past the 10-minute mark. But then 10 minutes later, Frontale opened the scoring when Kyohei Noborizato crossed from the left, and it was the ball was volleyed high into the net past Masaaki Higashiguchi by Leandro Damião. And Neil, well, I'll come back to you. So obviously the strike force has been one of the hallmarks of this team. You don't have a 20-goal scorer like Olunga at Kashiwa, but it's the spread of goals throughout this team. It's remarkable. 17 different players have scored a league goal for you this season. And it seems to be either Leandro Damião or Yu Kobayashi, obviously, getting the start up front. And, Damião has really come into his own this season, hasn't he? I think it's 12 for him in the league now. And, great for him to get you off the mark in this huge game.
Yeah, definitely. It hasn't really... his season this year has been much better than last year, and I feel like he's settling in more. I still don't think we really play to his strengths particularly, and it's kind of telling that we put a cross in and he smacks it into the net, and we haven't really crossed that much for him, and he hasn't really had so many chances recently. But you kind of blew my one stat I'd prepared for this slightly, but my spin is slightly different. I've got 11 players with 3 goals or more. So, I mean, I think that's why it would be so difficult to preempt what you might say later. It's difficult to pick who has been best, because the good performances have been spread so widely throughout the team, and it kind of feels a little bit like maybe in a way that the strikers haven't been scoring so much. And I know this is a ridiculous thing to say because they're the two highest scorers in the team. So, I mean, it's plainly ridiculous thing to say. But it seems that in a way, the majority of goals have come from other areas of the pitch, and the striker is almost like a person who is there to not score. This is absolute nonsense, but the spread of goals is pretty amazing. And it was, I mean, I'm sure Yokohama F. Marinos fans won't like me saying this, but one of the biggest cheers last night was probably for the fifth goal, because it was Manabu scoring, and we love him, and he hasn't really done what many people expected him to do, but he's a real favorite in the stadium, and it was great to see him score, Damian score, who's another big favorite, and then Ienaga to get 3 against his old club was, it's pretty special, really.
Yeah, no question at all. So, Leandro opening the scoring in the 22nd minute. Shortly before halftime, he had a chance to make it 2 when he was sent racing clear from the halfway line by Akihiro Ienaga. Leandro forced a good low save from Higashiguchi at his near post. But then a minute later, Frontale did get the all-important second goal before halftime, Sam. And it was the same combination. This time, Leandro headed an Aotanaka corner towards goal. Ienaga ran onto the ball and volleyed in from inside the 6-yard box. So was this, just reward for a completely dominant first half for Frontale? They obviously looked to kill this game off in the first half, basically, and they could have been further in front by halftime, by the looks of things.
Yeah, this was thoroughly deserved. They pretty much dominated from the first minute, as you said. I think they needed that first goal just to kind of settle down a little bit, but once they got that, there was only ever one winner in this, and 2-0 at halftime. Well, at this point, it was pretty much game over. Gamba didn't, to me, look like they were ever going to get back into it, and as Neil said earlier, they had to face the decision whether they sit back or go for it, and they kind of didn't either. But yeah, this was a nice goal, I thought. Damian missed a few good chances going one-on-one. There's another coming up in the second half. But this corner was really well worked. The movement from Ienaga, it looks like they'd worked on it in training, where the outswinging corner, it's flicked on. Ienaga just gets himself into all sorts of space. It's a very good finish, actually, to react, even though it was close range. So it was just rewards for Kawasaki. I thought they were thoroughly dominant throughout all the game, and they could have even been much more than 2-0 up at this stage.
Indeed, indeed, and it didn't take them long to build on their advantage. Just 4 minutes into the second half, Frontale regained possession after a 50-50 challenge on halfway. The ball broke to Kaoru Toma, who made a surging diagonal run forward and slid the ball out to Ienaga on the right. He took a touch to sort his feet out and then fired a low shot to the far post in off Higashiguchi's fingertips. And there was obviously more to come from Ienaga, Neil. And, he might feature a little bit later on in the episode when we get your thoughts on some of Frontale's best players of the season, well, at least so far. I think it would be fair to say that Ienaga made a somewhat slow start to this season. We know what he's capable of, obviously winning the Player of the Year award in 2018. And, he had to go up a level or two, I think, after his start to the season. And, he seems to have done that in the last month or so. And, obviously he's profiting on the generosity of his teammates on some occasions here, but he's stuck away three very good goals, and he seems to have come in back into his own in the second half of this season.
Yeah, I think he's quite a streaky player in that he'll sort of some games he'll be completely different class, and then. Like, kind of before, he hasn't played the last couple of games, which is maybe hints at why we weren't very good in Oita. But before then, it was like he'd been miscalibrated or something. Everything was like 15 degrees off. All the passes were the wrong angle and the wrong weight and stuff. So he does seem to sort of go in sort of streaks of great play and then quite disappointing play. But, I mean, he's another sort of a real fan favourite, I think. I mean, all of them probably are, really, but he's got quite an enjoyably sort of roguish attitude sometimes. With his he sort of gets a little bit grumpy about stuff, and he's got a weird warm-up routine before the game. And I think everybody really enjoys his character, and to see him get three in this game, it was fantastic, and sort of showed what we'd been missing against Oita, perhaps. But yeah, I totally agree that he hasn't had his sort of an MVP season, but he's been so important on so many occasions, so he's definitely up there in the top, however many we might want to narrow it down to.
Yes indeed. All right, so Mitoma set up Ienaga for the third early in the second half, and he did it again, Mitoma, 17 minutes from time. Again, breaking down the left this time after he was sent running clear by Leandro after good work in defence from Naborizato again. Yeah, Mitoma drove forward, and when he dribbled to the edge of the box, played the ball across to Ienaga, who sent his first-time shot into the roof of the net, past a horribly exposed Higashiguchi. If there was any hope of a Gumba getting back into the game at 3-0, then it was obviously extinguished with 15 minutes left. With Ienaga's hat-trick goal, a superb performance from him. And, I mean, as this game went on, Sam, was there anything positive we can really say about Gumba? I mean, their supporters will be, obviously really, really disappointed with the performance, not to mention the result. But was there any sliver of hope that you could see for Gumba? Obviously not to get back into this game, but did they at least fight it out?
No, not really. I was pretty disappointed with the response. I mean, I think they came up against a kind of juggernaut, and Kawasaki were going to win this game no matter what was going on. But I just thought, they didn't offer too much. They were... I don't know if it was, as Neil mentioned, that kind of halfway house, and they didn't really know what to do, whether they should be going forward or not. But they just kind of... They were passengers in the game, I thought. They were quite passive. They took off Usami midway through the second half. So without him, without Adam Milson, who's obviously not playing anymore, and Anose was injured, they didn't really have enough quality going forward to really cause too many problems for Kawasaki, and defensively they were a little bit lapsed. I mean, the goals that Kawasaki scored, although well created, there wasn't a lot of pressure on the ball. A lot of the times, like, Ianaga was completely unmarked at the back post, so they were just a little bit all over the place. The only positive I can say is that at least they don't have to play Kawasaki again, and the next game is Sagan Tosu at home. But yeah, it was a really poor performance from Gamba, and it's hard for, I would say, for even the most ardent Gamba supporter to say there was much positive coming out of this 90 minutes.
Yeah, fair enough then. And then, as Neil has mentioned, Manabu Saito added the gloss in the 90th minute. He'd come on for Mitoma with about 5 minutes to go at the same time as Kengo Nakamura replaced Ryota Oshima and took the armband off him. Obviously, Kengo's storied career is about to come to an end. And, just a remarkable legend of the J-League. Great to see him lifting the plate again and getting to take a bath on the championship presentation stage, which we might ask Neil if he knows anything about how that all came together in just a sec. But, so Manabu Saito rounded off the scoring after fellow substitute Reo Hatate's shot was saved by Higashiguchi, who, you couldn't really fault for any of the five goals, I wouldn't say. He's obviously had a terrific season for Gamba, and, just a performance that, seemed off colour from start to finish, and, not a lot that Higashiguchi could do about it. So, full-time celebrations. How were they, Neil, and how did they compare to the other titles that you've won? Obviously, people are encouraged to be socially distanced these days. There isn't the usual atmosphere in the stadium in terms of singing and, drumming and all that sort of stuff. So you were obviously really able to enjoy yourself with your wife, but was there much... did people kind of flaunt the social distancing rules and give their neighbours hugs, etc., or were you forced to bump elbows?
There was a bit of elbow bumping. I think perhaps the fact that all the seats are reserved now is sort of cuts down on the huggability. So it's basically probably people are sitting in groups of two at the most, really. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
I think there's lots of sort of gesturing to people you know from a distance. But I mean, I have to admit that probably most of the goals, some sound did emit from my mouth, and there was a clear roar at the end of the game, and on for the goals as well. So perhaps if someone wants to criticise us, we didn't particularly contain ourselves very well. But it was a bit weird because obviously there's none of the sort of interaction, the closeness. But I don't know, it didn't feel as weird as I thought it might. I think the real shame is the songs, because I like the songs. I'm a bit of a sucker for the songs, and it's a shame not to be able to sing the victory song. We could mime the victory song, but we couldn't sing it, and we can't wave the towels. We can just hold them and sort of lightly vibrate them. But I guess sort of looking forward, probably the weirdest thing is that I guess we will never hear the Kengo song sung again, because I unless COVID disappears in the next week and we're back to normal. And I wonder if we'll never hear the Mitoma song sung again, and I think it was only sung like once or twice, because I don't know if he'll be with us next year. Perhaps not. He wants to travel, I think. It was weird, but it was better than I expected it would be. And there was some distancing. It wasn't perfect. Of course it wasn't perfect. And I don't think even through any of the sort of the COVID era games, any team has done anything perfectly. But I think every team has done a pretty good job to whichever standards they want to keep to. So, I don't know, a pat on the back for everyone, maybe.
Fair enough. Absolutely terrific. Obviously, I've never experienced that, winning the league as an FC Tokyo supporter in the ground. So, very, very jealous. But, as we said, absolutely have to congratulate you and your team on what has been a record-smashing season. And obviously, you're not done yet with the four games to go. You've already set the points record for a single stage season. With this win, you moved on to 75, passing the record that you had jointly held of 72. Wrapping up the title with four games to go in it in and of itself is a record as well. That's the earliest that a team has wrapped up the J1 title in a single stage season. And, well, yeah, I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on what both of your guys' thoughts on what you think Kawasaki's motivation might be for the final four games of the year. I guess it's to try and set a points record that might stand for years or who knows, perhaps even decades to come. And there's also one record that a team that loves scoring goals as much as Frontale do, I'm sure they might sneakily be very, very keen to get, and they're well and truly within touching distance, is the J1 single season and single stage season record for goals scored in the season. You currently have 79, Neil, and the record is 84. And you might remember, you might not, you might know, you might not, that the Kawasaki actually hold the record themselves after their season of in 2006. They didn't win the title that year, they finished second, but they have set in that season the record of 84 league goals in a single stage season. So yeah, you're five away from tying your own record and six goals away from breaking that as well. And with four games to go, well, obviously the odds would be very, very short on that. So, Sam, I don't know, what do you see? Yeah, how's Toru Oniki going to motivate his side for the last four games now that it's done? I mean, we saw what happened to Akita, of course. We mentioned it in this Monday's episode of the pod. They hadn't lost a game all season, won the title, and then promptly went out and lost their next league game. So I guess the Toru Oniki's got a very recent example to show his players of what can happen when they ease off a tad and reduce their levels.
Yeah, I suppose that Kawasaki having the weekend off gives them time to celebrate, so you don't get necessarily that hangover straight away. Mm. But I think the just to be able to get 87 points, I think that would be enough of a motivation to set as high a record as possible. The same with the goals record. I imagine that they'll be doing as much as possible to get Keigo Nakamura a couple more goals before the end of the season. But then they'll probably balance it out. I'd like to see maybe some more of the younger players get a little bit of game time. Like Miyashiro's not necessarily played too much, especially in the last couple of months. They've got a couple of defenders that have not played at all, which is strange given they don't have many centre-backs. But maybe get some more of those youngsters in, mix and match a little bit. But I just think the mentality of Kawasaki, the way it has been all season, will just be to go out, score as many goals as possible, and then get as many points at the same time. So, yeah, I don't think motivation will necessarily drop for them. And, yeah, I still think teams might be still quite wary of going to play Kawasaki for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, I reckon so. And also, Neil, obviously, Oniki will want his players to stay in rhythm ahead of the Emperor's Cup semi-final on the 27th of December. So, yeah, what do you think he'll do? Do you think we might see a mixture of the young and the very old? Do you think Kengo will play as much as he wants to in the last four games? Or do you think Oniki will give a priority to giving younger players like Miyashiro and even Hatate, give him a couple more starts before the end of the league campaign?
I reckon we'll see Kengo in every game. Maybe not starting, but definitely he'll come on at some stage or start and go off at some stage in every game. Mm-hmm. I think definitely there's the motivation to just to keep going at like 100 miles an hour and just really see what we can achieve and see if we can beat that record. I wouldn't be surprised if we see like a couple of like sort of rotating places on the bench with people getting like 5 minutes at the end of games, people who we haven't seen yet. And I'd really like that because the player whose towel I bought this year, the new centre back Kamiya, hasn't even made the bench yet. So so I'd like to see him come on for like 5 minutes at some stage. It would be good if everyone got a little go, and sort of towards the end of games, I guess it was towards the end of last season, I can't exactly remember, Mitoma came on for 10 minutes at the end of last season away against Nagoya, I think, if I recall correctly. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's giving people a little bit of time and a little opportunity, but I think he's gonna keep going with what he's got and try and finish the season at as high a speed as possible, if that makes sense.
All right, well, yeah, heaven help the rest of us if you're going to unearth another Kaoru Mitoma in the last four games of the season to play a proper role next year. But, yeah, it will be interesting to see how Toru Oniki, juggles things in the last four rounds. And, Sam mentions there that Frontale have this weekend off, so absolutely a chance to celebrate properly and then get, refocused for their next league game on the 5th of December when they travel to Shimizu. After that, it's Tosu also away. The final home game of the season will be against Urawa in the final midweek of the season before, of course, the last round is on Saturday, the 19th of December, and that in that round, Kawasaki will make the short trip over to Chiba to face Kashiwa. Okay, so, Neil, I have two very important questions for you. Firstly, what on earth was that golden bath doing on the podium when the players were presented with the plate and the gold trophy? And that's the most important question, so I'll save my second question till later. What on earth was up with that?
I don't know. I have a theory, but sort of on that topic, it makes me wonder how many of these kind of objects exist in storerooms in various places across the world that have been sort of novelty items that have been made for occasions that never happened, and it's like, so 20 years later someone says, why have we got a huge golden bathtub? And then I think the custodian or whatever will say, that's because we almost won the league and the name of the team is Frontale, so Furo Bath,
right,
I think.
Right.
So I think that's why there's a bath. Also, like when we won the first title, I think we had, like, I wish I knew what these things were called. You know, like the little wooden bowl that people use in an onsen, probably. I'm not an onsen person, so I think maybe we've got that as well because of the furo in Frontale, so the bath. So we had that. So obviously, the logical next step was to get a plastic golden bath on stage.
I wondered whether it was a retirement gift for Kengo. They were going to have it installed in his bathroom, but perhaps I'm off a bit off the mark there.
It's probably the next merch item to go on sale. Commemorative golden baths. You know, every house should have one. I mean, it wouldn't be ridiculous, would it, if it went on? Well, it would be ridiculous, but it wouldn't be that surprising if it became a purchasable item, I suppose. So.
Well, yeah, I saw Dan Olowitz tweeted out last night a flyer of Frontale Champions merchandise, and that was actually going to be my next question. Yeah, how much have you already ordered?
Nothing.
No, okay, fair enough. You're being restrained. Okay.
I think my wife will hit the Kengo merchandise quite hard. But I think she did say to me that she wasn't that impressed with the style of the stuff that's come out so far. So I'm sure there's plenty more Kengo stuff coming. I don't know. I mean, it's just like the titles are wonderful, and that's why we support and we watch football, because it's exciting and we want our team to win things. But it's like sort of tour T-shirts of bands. I'd rather just have a normal band T-shirt than a tour T-shirt. But I know why people buy them, but I will refrain.
I gotcha. Okay, fair enough then. So, this might be the last chance we have you on to talk about Kengo Nakamura, Neil. So, just tell us how much he means to Frontale supporters. Obviously, he's not the most popular player in my household because he's put FC Tokyo to the sword on so many occasions over the years. But all you can do is respect, the player. He is an absolute legend of the J-League and Japanese football as a whole. There's absolutely no question about that. I mean, 18 years at the same club, and to come close so many times, but then to finish your career with such a flourish, with three titles in 4 years, and coming back after such a disastrous knee injury last season, to firstly make it back to the pitch was remarkable in itself. But the way he's seen out this season, it's just a tribute to, as I say, one of the all-time greats. So you'll obviously be very, very sad to see him go. But, you must just be filled with so much pride and love for the everything you've seen him do over the years.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, he's long been a favourite of me and my wife. And the first game we saw in, I can't remember what year it was, but I've had a Kengo T-shirt from then. And he's a legend. And I mean, I can't really say much more than you said, but he'll be missed. And we all love him. And I mean, do we want him to take on a role at the club? No, nobody's really sure. I'm not sure he wants to particularly, because maybe all he can do is tarnish his reputation. So, it's the sort of fitting, perfect end. And I don't know, there's something kind of nice about going out at the right time, finishing on a high. And I mean, I'm not pointing fingers at any Yokohama FC players, but I mean, it's great that they still want to play, but, you know, sooner or later, you've got to think it's not worth training every day to sit on the bench for three or four games a season. But, yeah, good for him to end on a high. Hopefully a Emperor's Cup high, if we're really lucky. That would be sort of almost too perfect. And after the injury, yeah, it just all makes sense, basically. So, delighted and we love him, and it's just a real shame that the last game of the season is away at Kashiwa, which is always impossible to get a ticket for. And, of course, this year will be just unbelievably impossible to get a ticket for. And he's also a ground where they seem to hate away fans and away teams. So maybe it's not the finale that he'd like, but hopefully it won't be. Hopefully he'll feature after that in a Emperor's Cup game, perhaps. But yeah, legend. That's it.
Yep, absolutely. So, obviously, Kengo's garnered a lot of headlines in the second half of the season as he's made his way back from the final stages of his recovery and then actually made it back onto the pitch. And Kaoru Toma, who we've mentioned numerous times on this particular podcast, and obviously dozens of times throughout the season, has made such a huge impact all season long. Are there any unsung heroes, Neil, the players that have flown under the radar perhaps, but the players that you think have played a hugely important role in this title win? Next, we're going to come on to some your short list, although you've warned us that it isn't particularly short, of Frontale players for us to consider for the Kawasaki Player of the Season. But before we get on to that, are there any as I say, unsung heroes you'd like to give a special shout out to for everything they've done over the course of the year?
Yeah, I guess, and to be honest, my shortlist is not short, so I'm not going to tell you my shortlist. I'm just going to tell you my three when we come on to that, because I don't want to miss out anyone. And I think so many people deserve a mention that to mention like 10 and forget three would really upset me. Mm-hmm. And I remember last time you were talking about this and I forgot Yamane and I felt a bit guilty afterwards. But for sort of unsung heroes, I think I'm going to say Nobori Zato, because I want Kurumaya playing there, but you can't argue with how we've been playing this year, so he's been doing a good job there. I think so, this is really ridiculous thing answer to this question, but I think Kobayashi and Damian are unsung heroes because of the work they've done that isn't scoring goals. And sort of Damian last night sort of pass for one of Mitoma's runs and Ienaga's goal was just really, really great, I thought. And he's really 100% into Frontale, it seems. So, yeah, kind of stupid to mention them as unsung heroes. I think I wish Miyashiro had more time, but maybe he'll get it soon. But he's one for the future anyway. Hatate, I think, has been great when he's emerged from the shadow of Mitoma. And I'm just going to mention the whole team now, aren't I? Morita, I should say Morita as well, because he didn't play for a long time this year. He came in and made that sort of anchor role his own. And he's played some of his best football for us, I think, this year that we've ever seen him play. And even when he played at centre-back after Taniguchi got sent off, I thought he did a pretty good job. So he's unsung perhaps as well, but not really. I mean, it's difficult for someone to be unsung in this team because it's such a sort of team effort. But yeah, so I'm not going to mention any more apart from just three names, and I'm going to give you like a reason for each and not be drawn on other people who I haven't mentioned because I just don't want to upset anyone.
No worries.
Any fan, any players.
No worries at all. So why don't we just move on? We'll do that now then. So yeah, who are your top three in no particular order?
In let's do alphabetical order.
That's a good idea, yeah.
Jesse L, because we've conceded so few goals, so I've got to choose one defender. And Taniguchi's been great, but Taniguchi's got a blunder in him occasionally and a red card or three in him. So I think Jesse L was just... I remember him cleaning out Furuhashi on the centre line against Vissel Kobe, and it was just one of the most marvellous things I've ever seen. Came charging out of defence and just stopped their attack before it even came out of their half. So, yeah, Jesse L. Next one, you might not have heard of this player. He's called Mitoma. And I feel like I have to mention him. And someone on Twitter said to me last week that they loved reading my blog posts because every week I'm more unimpressed by Mitoma, and it's ridiculous. And it did make me think that I've been a bit harsh on him, but he's fantastic talent, and he's really lifted spirits. And I mean, everybody knows Mitoma, so I don't need to say anything. He's just a great player. And the last one is Tanaka Ao, I think, because I mean, basically I've picked someone up front, someone in the middle, and someone at the back, and Tanaka Ao seems to have everything. He can play in the anchor. He can attack. He was playing on left wing on the left wing against Oita and was left wing, right wing, sorry, against Oita, and was playing a lot better than the right wingers who'd played there. He's taking corners now and he's scoring goals, and he had a funky head injury with a nice, well, funky hat after a head injury. So, I mean, yeah, Tanaka Ao, and he's probably my shirt next year, I think. So, yeah, Jesse L, Mitoma, Tanaka Ao. So.
Rightio. Any surprises for you in there, Sam?
Well, I'm deeply upset that my boyfriend, Ryota Oshima, has not got a mention. I might cry myself to sleep now. But I thought, yeah, I can't argue with the three that he's picked. I love Jesse L. I think he's a terrific defender. I mean, I don't think he'll be picked for the MVP from the whole league, because I imagine it will go to an attacker. But Jesse, I think, has made such a difference to that back line. And they're great going forward, but that defensive record is so good, and he is a massive part of that. His one-on-one defending, I don't think anyone comes close to it in the league this year. I mean, we've spoken about Mitoma every week. He is fantastic. I love watching him. I hope, selfishly, that he doesn't go to Europe, even though he deserves to be there. He's been fantastic. And, yeah, Tanaka, hope that he wins an award and then just allows the mascot to go and collect it for him again, as it did last year. So that was fantastic. But he's a terrific player. He's only 22, which is incredible for the... Yeah, he can play pretty much anywhere in that midfield. He even floats out onto the right wing occasionally just to fill in for Ianaga as he comes in. He's so versatile. And yeah, just three terrific players. But I mean, you could... As we've mentioned before, we could have picked 11, 13, 15 of this team. They've all been magnificent.
Yeah, all right. Fantastic stuff. So, well, yeah, we obviously don't have to make our final decision right now, Sam. But, yes, Neil, you've made your case there. And, as Sam says, we could pick 10 players. But that will be our starting point. Those three players will be our starting point for our final three. when we get around to, yeah, Kawasaki, right, probably at the last episode of the J1 season. So, yeah, Neil, what else can we say? It's been absolutely magic. I asked you if you could pop on for 15 to 20 minutes tonight, and it has turned into 40, 45. But, yeah, I've really enjoyed it. It's been... as we said, a remarkable season, and your boys fully deserve all the plaudits that come their way and all the records. And you obviously haven't stopped yet, have you, with four games left to go? Yeah, that the single season goals scored record is looming as the next one. So I'm sure there will be more records to fall before the end of the year. So congratulations again, mate. What else can we say? Absolutely brilliant, and we're rapt for you that you're able to be there. And, to enjoy it with your wife. So, brilliant stuff. Great to hear from you again. And, enjoy the celebration. You got a weekend off to celebrate now.
Yeah, weekend off to celebrate. Right, that blog post about last night. And, a few drinks might be had. Thanks for asking me on again. It's always a pleasure. And some people would be delighted to hear that this is my final appearance of the season. I can understand I'm a little bit irritating sometimes.
Always a pleasure, Neil. Always a pleasure. It's great to have you on. And, we look forward to doing so again. You'll probably win the Emperor's Cup, so we'll probably have to have you on again after that. But if not, we will definitely catch up again in the new year. So, thanks again to Neil Debnam. After a quick hit of music, Sam and I will very briefly, I promise, round up the other games from Wednesday and bring you up to date on what's been going on in the Asian Champions League. Elsewhere on Wednesday, Kashima blew their chance to go level on points with third-placed Nagoya when they were belted 4-1 at home by Kashiwa, for who Michael Olunga scored his 25th goal of the season. Cristiano blasted in a trademark pile driver, and Yuta Kamiya wrapped up the scoring with a superb curler late on. Sam, it appeared to me that Reysol were just meandering towards the end of the season, perhaps with the Levain Cup final looming off in the distance, distracting them. But this was a great demonstration of their firepower.
Yeah, it was a completely different performance from the one they put in against Tosu. I think it helped that Kashima were a team that come out on attack, and Kashima just hit them on the break. And it was a really even game for large parts, and I think 4-1 flatters Kashima a little bit, but it does show just how good they can be when they're given space to operate in. And yeah, they score some fantastic goals. Alungas was superb. Cristiano just belted his into the top corner, and Kamiya's was fantastic, bending round the defender into the bottom corner. So yeah, really good performance from Reysol. They are technically still in the race for fourth place, maybe. So they've got the games in hand. So if they can continue playing the way they did against Kashima, then maybe there's a late run in them. But I think it's probably too little too late.
Yes, you suggested we include them in our rundown of the team still challenging in the first episode of the week, didn't you? But I put the kibosh on that. But this result is an indication of what they're capable of. So a couple more like that, and as you say, they do have games in hand on the teams above them. We can't completely rule them out at this stage. Cerezo Osaka also snapped a recent run of poor form, and they joined Kashima on 52 points and actually rose above them on goal difference when they won 1-0 away at Oita. Hiroshi Kiyotake's early goal, the difference between the teams. But any lingering chance of Hiroshima playing a role in the battle for the ACL spots looks to have evaporated after they had to come from behind to draw 1-1 away at third from bottom, Shonan. The two other games saw Shimizu bounce straight back to winning ways when they roared into a 2-0 lead inside the first 10 minutes, led 3-0 at half time, and ultimately cruised 3-1 away at Yokohama FC. And as tempting as it was to lead this episode with Tosu 0, Sendai 1, we're actually saving it until last. Some might say saving the best till last, as Zlatan Nagasawa continued his late run at the Golden Boot with his sixth goal in four games. Another superb header, the only goal of the game, as bottom club Sendai won 1-0 away at Tosu. So, Nagasawa's got a new name, Sam, and you came up with it. So, sounds like you're turning around on the big fella.
No, not at all. It led to a decent thread on Twitter that I had to try and get rid of because it was just a lot of praise for Nagasawa, but he's Peter Nagasawa, what else was there? Oh, I can't remember. There was loads of names for him. But he is in very, very good form, in fairness to him, in the last 10 days or so. So, yeah, give him credit where it's due because it's not often that I'm going to give Nagasawa credit.
Most definitely, most definitely. All right, so, Sendai are still at bottom of the table, but a decent run for them, I suppose, considering where they are in the table. They've won two of their last four, so showing signs of life at the end of the season. Actually, most of the teams in the bottom six are doing decently in the form table, so it's good to see, as I think we said maybe a couple of weeks ago, it's good to see teams not just completely mailing it in the last month, 2 months of the season. They're seeing things out and oftentimes coming away with impressive victories. All right, let's finish this episode, Sam, by just bringing the listeners up to date with what's been going on over in Qatar with the Asian Champions League. The three J1 representatives have all played their first game over in Qatar. Unfortunately for FC Tokyo, the first team to play on Tuesday night, they were very ordinary and ended up suffering a 1-0 defeat at the hands of Shanghai Shenhua, who earned a penalty with 20 minutes left, which was converted, and that was the only goal of the game. But much better news on Wednesday night for firstly Kobe claiming a stunning victory 3-1 over Guangzhou Evergrande. And also in the nightcap, an impressive win for Yokohama F. Marinos over Shanghai SIPG that was sealed very, very late on by Jun Amano, who got the only goal of the game in the 90th minute as F. Marinos won that game 1-0. So, Sam, obviously it's only one game. They all have more to play. But positives for Kobe and Yokohama. I mean, Kobe with the Malaysian team dropping out, we already know they're through to the round of 16.
Yeah, Vissel were the surprise package. I mean, in the league, they've kind of been preparing for this Champions League for a good couple of months now. And it did seem to work. They played very well. They were in full control of this game for pretty much the entirety of it. I mean, Iniesta, Furuhashi, Sakai, the usual suspects, they played very well. It was pretty comfortable. They did concede a pretty dodgy goal. The way they conceded it, with Yamakawa heading back towards his own goal, Furuhashi then heading it off the post and in. So there is still the Vissel we know and love from the J-League still there. But going forward, they were terrific. Yokohama, they got a very good win. The game itself was horrendous to watch, just as a J-League-leaning neutral. It was just, really poor. But Yokohama did enough. I think that they lacked Junior Santos. You could tell that there was something missing in that team without him. But they've got their 9 points now. They're almost there. They've got a little bit of time to work on how they're going to approach the game without him. And but a win against Shanghai is always one that it's a terrific result. And Obi made another fantastic penalty save, adding to the one from Kobayashi the week before.
Of course,
Oscar missed a penalty, which RMC or At Work the Beat on Twitter informed me was the third time he's missed an ACL penalty against J-League opposition. So, he doesn't like facing the Japanese opposition. But, good performance from Yokohama. And then Tokyo were the disappointment. I thought that game was another pretty poor one. I thought Shanghai Shenhua weren't very good. They were a team that were there to be beaten, but there was no real cutting edge from Tokyo. I thought that once they went 1-0 down, they brought on Nakamura and Watanabe, which is not it's not a substitution that makes you think that they're really going for this game. And it kind of just petered out. So they've got a very big game in the reverse fixture against Shenhua coming up tomorrow or today as you listen to this. So
yeah, they need to win that one, otherwise they're really up against it.
Yeah, most definitely. So, yeah, that's right, Sam. On Friday, Japan time, yeah, the day this episode will go out, the Tokyo have a rematch against Shenhua. And then on the Saturday, yeah, Kobe and Yokohama F. Marinos will also play their rematches against the Chinese opposition before they finish off their groups. Although, of course, after that, Kobe will only have one more game against Suwon of South Korea as they get ready for the round of 16. And, yeah, depending where they finish in their group, they indeed might be facing F. Marinos in the round of 16. But we shall see more group stage games to be played before all that is settled, of course. All right, so, yeah, that's our very quick look back at the other J1 games from Wednesday and, indeed, the ACL up to this point. But, yeah, we obviously wanted to give Kawasaki their due, so it was a terrific tour to catch up with Neil, and yeah, fantastic that he could be there and yeah, enjoy that moment, because obviously there were periods throughout the season where supporters were not allowed in the stadiums, and we wondered whether that would be a thing for the whole year. So the fact that there have been supporters allowed back in and their numbers have been able to be increased in yeah, the past couple of months is fantastic, and that so many were in at the Todoroki was fantastic in this helter-skelter year. So, Sam, all right, well, thanks for doing double duty this week. I know you've obviously been flat out with so many games to cover, so great to catch up with you. Thanks for making the time to do so. And, yeah, well, I'll speak to you in a few days for our next episode.
Yeah, well, I'll speak to you soon. Hopefully there'll be less technical issues when we go, on my end at least, when we go back to the Monday schedule. Yeah, it's been a bit dodgy my end today, but hopefully it's come out all right. And, yeah, hope we'll speak to you again next week.
Terrific stuff. Yeah, apparently Sam's computer doesn't like recording podcasts on Thursdays. But, yeah, hopefully we probably won't have that problem too many times in the future. All right, well, yeah, we'll leave it there. That's it for this bonus episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank and congratulate Neil Debnam. We'd also like to thank our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. And, of course, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back after the weekend to round up the action. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast.